know this was being recorded.
Oh, you want me to stop?
No, you can record. This is going to make me even more nervous. So I did a presentation for this because I had accumulated my own little cheat sheet of tips for using GCC whenever I go help customers or do whatever. And so I thought it would be nice if I shared them. And so I did a presentation at, I guess initially at the CLF conference in Linz, which was really nice, by the way. And so Tim asked me to reduce it in length and do a presentation here. So I tried to chop out half the slides, or a third of the slides, which may make sense. So first thing is GCC is a big confederation of tools. And a lot of users just don't know that. They use the tool blindly, they take in GCC and some parameters, and they're not really aware of what's going on. It's actually a big confederation of things that work together. And some of the tips I have later on get into what it does underneath the cover so you can debug problems that you may or may not have. Whenever you get this thing called GCC, if you get it in binary form, you sort of pour it out and everything works together. But there are other parts of it like this. Anyway, so there are other parts of it that are really part of something called binutils, which is really based on something else called libdfd, which is the real guts behind that. And there's another separate project called GED. And so usually you get all these things in one bit. As the prior presenter was talking about, there's some tools out there, that cross-build tool, right, that'll sort of put all this together for you. But in essence, it's still, oh, wait a second, thank you very much.
Here's the other side.
I see if I'm expert on the other side. Ooh, there we go. Okay. So so there's some things, well, these usually come to you all in one part here. And also the standard C library is also peripheral. So before I started getting paid to do Linux work, I was paid to do work for some work on tools provided by some company out of Redmond. And for there, they really didn't have the notion of a separate libc. So anyway, so it's the shock. When you install GCC, you typically see it in this configuration. You have an install directory and a target processor. There's the bin directory. And that's where you see some compiler in there that is what you invoke. That's really just a shell that invokes the cross compiler that really lives down here in this directory here. And whenever GCC was built, it was set up so that it actually invoked the right platform. If you want to, and I don't know why you're doing this, but sometimes you got it, right? You got to do what you got to do sometimes. If you want to add in libraries that you don't want to have to refer to through -L, you can tuck them in this directory. Totally fine. You can take your libraries and stick them in there, and then that way, whenever you're doing your compilation work, you don't have to point off to other directories. There's pluses and minuses behind doing that. Sometimes you get yourself in a pickle because then you have something slightly different than what you were distributed. But depending upon what you're stuck with from the other guy who did everything wrong setting up your system, you have to do something like that. I put this first because this is my favorite GCC command. --\#\#\#. I'm not sure. But this will, and whatever else your command line is, and this will output exactly what GCC is going to do in order to get your thing built. Here is some example output from that. You can read this real fast or whatever, but you can see from this, it's invoking the, it's telling us about the configuration, it's telling us about the path, it tells you exactly what compiler you have, the assembler version, the linker, where Spoolmos library is from. If you're ever in a situation you can't figure out what's happening, this is the place to start. My strategy, and I think they even mentioned here, is pipe it to an output file, right? And then you have an instant script that you can build things with. A lot of folks use GCC and they're not aware of what all the different command line parameters do with respect to library lookup and the order. And by doing this, you can then manipulate the subcommands so that they do the right thing. And then you can change the command that you really send to GCC so it does the right thing. It's really handy. This has gotten me out of all sorts of pickles whenever I can't figure out what's happening. Or someone has set up their own tool chain and it doesn't work quite right. This is another one of those porting things that saved me all kinds of time too. You can invoke GCC and just invoke it with the preprocessor, and if you pass in two versions of the compiler, pipe the output into files, sort of them, right? And then run diff to see what differences there are. There are all kinds of little demons that can arise out of folks that have dependencies on these little bits, on how these macros are defined. That when you go to try to import and move it to a different machine or even to a different version of GCC, you'll find out things don't work. And it's not always really obvious. Try to stay 10 minutes. This is another favorite one here. So this is pre-processing retained comments. This has also saved me a lot of effort. There are some folks that they figure out what pound define does and how the macros work, and they think that's a really nifty way to do all their engineering and stuff. And so they'll write bugs that will pop up just the way macros are expanded because they just didn't do the right thing. And what this will do is it will run your program through the cross-compiler. It'll run through the cross-compiler. It'll run through the preprocessor. Will expand all the pound define. So then you can see what the code looks like when the compiler gets it, which is not always obvious, depending on how the engineer did it. And then you can figure out where problems are coming from just as a result of how the macros were used. My personal version of this is since it retains the comments, you can put a comment like, look here, right? That's my payment thing, right? So then you can look through for look here, and then if you have a problem around that area that you think is macro related, it makes it very easy to find that. Another classic cross-compiler configuration issues. So the set of end commands here deal with how or what include files are being pulled out of the system for any one compilation. This is another cross-compiler configuration issue. I think I run across a couple times a year. You can also use this to do make file generation. I think way back when Eclipse actually did this to generate its make files. It just went in the back of gcc-m. This here will tell you all the includes. This-mm, no system files. That's really good to see what's going on in your project. Again, there are some folks that are into sometimes reordering the way include files are used, or they have build scripts that are just difficult to parse. So if you set C flags to -mm and let this catch the output from this, you have a better idea what that person is doing. This is -mg. This won't produce an error for missing header files. So if you're sort of in the middle of things, you can still go on. This was here pretty much to accommodate folks that are using this to generate a make file. So if you have your file name as a certain target, but you really want that target to be called something else, like a macro for make, because you're using this to generate a make file, you can use -mt. This is an example of the output. It's not that exciting. You can sit in your computer and look at it yourself, but this gives you some hint about what this will show you. There are a lot of times when folks, again, just don't understand where things are coming from, and so you can trace that down to the end. I was at the show in San Jose in the Computer History Museum, and so someone at the end said, "Hey, this is a really good one that I have." This tells you what files a linker opens. Really handy. Ashton told me about this. I thought, oh, geez. And I was having an issue with someone I was working with where they had, again, ordering problems. And so what this will tell you is what files were open and where the symbols were found as it did in the link. Really great way to fish out what's happening. Here, this is the example of the output. So here you can see this is CRT0, right? And then this library file here tells you that it found that it opened up this .a and you found that file, that .o file within that .a file. That's where it was fishing around. And then here, this piece here, I sometimes drag it on this head. I'm like, what's going on with this? I never asked for this file. Where's it come out? This is where it does I broke this too. So what this someone had updated the page and added this. I stuck these all on a page, and so someone added them. I thought, well, before I do this, I wonder if anyone updated that page on the Linux that I put all these on. And it turns out someone did. And for this, you can pass in a file name and a symbol, and the system will come back and tell you where that symbol is defined, what file that came out of. Again, very helpful. None of you have ever done this. The other guy did it. And in case you have a situation, you have a couple different symbols that are defined in several different files. You can also do dash x linker dash dash cref, and the rest of your command line will produce a cross reference that tells you that in total for your entire compilation. One other thing I had when I initially did this, I had a cute little cascading diagram that had, fortunately, the cameras are printed on me. So I had a little cascading diagram that showed you how things link from one thing to the other. A couple of slides I talked about talked about GEZ construction and file extension. File extension is extremely important in that system because it figures out how to handle the file. There's something called a specs file that was sort of baked into the compiler at the time it was built. And so I've listed in here the extensions that are all C extensions, right? So these would pass the program as though it was a C file. They're preprocessor, compiler, assembler, linker, output, right? This is a really good one. The .i or .ii, if you're doing C++ work, that is a preprocessed C file. And so that's all that's pretty nifty in that that's a file that will not get passed through the preprocessor. If you've done that. If you're itching to set something up, you can always run gcc-e. That'll produce everything that has been already preprocessed. And if you call that file .i, it will pass it through the preprocessor again. .s is assembler code. .capital S is assembler code that will not be pre-processed. This little last one is what causes all kinds of grief for people that are doing Linux builds on a Sigwin host, because Sigwin has this notion of case preserving versus case with the marking the protocols. But they have the notion that they'll remember the case, but they won't differentiate between the two different cases, right? Fortunately, you can always use dash X to force a file to be interpreted a certain way. Again, this is going back to legacy system. If you have something that's a C file that contains C source code, but the extension is something way different, and you have a big collection of build scripts you don't want to modify, you can get in there with C flag and define your main such that GCC interprets those files as C files, so it passes them through the right execution. That's all I have. The important thing is that everyone, I'm sure, has their own stash of tips. You probably share them with your kids, talking about your wife over dinner, that kind of stuff. What you should do, it's not because it's true, right? So everyone has their own stash of tips. Visit us at unix.org/gcc under tips. Fill them in because I'm sure that there's more out there. And you should share because they are helpful and they do send you a bundle of time if you find one.